Welcome to PRN, Pause, Renew, Next, a podcast about soul care, scripture, and stories of faith. I'm Jenny Detweiler, and friends, I'm so glad that you're here with me today as we jump into season 7 of the podcast. I'm so thankful and grateful to have gotten this far that I'm actually here in season 7 with you. And I'm also really excited about this year's theme and all that we have to look forward to on the podcast this season. This summer, as I was thinking and praying about the podcast, one theme that the Lord really brought to me was the theme of being in process. You know, as a therapist and also as a human, I realized that that's where most of us are most of the time, is in process. We're on a journey. We have not yet arrived. So whether it comes to faith or whether it comes to mental health, and we will be talking about both in this season, we are really going to be looking at what it means to be in process, in the mess, in the middle, before we've yet arrived. And I'm so excited about today's guest as we begin this season. She's an old friend of the podcast, Sarah Westfall. She was on a couple years ago to talk a little bit about belonging and quite a bit about grief. But since then, she's written an entire book. It's called The Way of Belonging, Reimagining Who We Are and How We Relate. And when we think about being in process, what better place to start than thinking about belonging? Sarah is so thoughtful and insightful, and I really enjoy getting to talk with her. I think you're really going to enjoy this conversation too. I pray that it blesses you and encourages you. So with that, let's jump into the conversation. Well, Sarah, welcome back to the podcast. Would you like to share a little bit about yourself with our friends?
Absolutely. Thanks so much for the invitation to be here. It's good to be back. I'm Sarah. I live in Indiana with my husband of 20 years, which is wild that it's to say that out loud. And with our 4 sons and a very anxious and strange Australian shepherd named Georgie. And by day, I am a writer. I get to do some speaking on occasion, and I'm also the host of the Human Together podcast. I also had a book come out just a couple months ago called The Way of Belonging, Reimagining Who We Are and How We Relate. And apart from all those things, I enjoy time spent in the kitchen. I enjoy slow Saturdays and really, really good coffee. We become kind of coffee snobs around here, and I don't know if there's any undoing it at this point.
I think I'm a coffee snob. Nobody else in my house drinks it. So what is your favorite? What do you like?
You know, my husband found this local roaster in Peoria, Illinois, because he travels there for work quite often, called CXT, and they do roast their own beans. And so while he's in Peoria, he always picks up a good amount of them. But we also order it and get our coffee by mail when we're not there. So that's how bougie we are these days.
Nice. So before we jump in and we talk about your book today and the meat of the important stuff, I want to ask you, since you're an author and a podcaster, what are your favorite podcasts and books that you've been reading and listening to lately?
Yeah, you know, I am not a political junkie. But I have been trying to just kind of keep my ear to the ground these days, and podcasts have been very helpful. And a podcast that a friend of mine recommended and I've really been enjoying is called Tangle, and it is an independent news source that features kind of what both sides of the aisle are saying and then offers some discourse and sometimes some disagreements by the people who are in the room. And I really appreciate that aspect, especially coming into the fall and where we are. So that's been one podcast that I've been listening to. And a book that I'm really excited about. It's not even out yet, but I'm going to go ahead and toot the horn for this book. It's coming out in October by Chuck DeGroat. It's called Healing What's Within. And Chuck is coming on the podcast, and so I got an advanced copy of his book, and it's just been such a gentle companion. I think it holds hands with my book really well as to what it looks like to really come home to God and to ourselves. And I think it's just going to be a really good book for especially your listeners to pick up in the coming months.
I love that. Thank you. I can't wait to read that myself. Okay, so a couple of years ago, I had you on before you did this, and we talked about belonging. But then you wrote a book that went way more in depth. And I really, really appreciate the things that you said. In fact, I'm going to quote from the book quite a lot today. But in your book, you write that we all have a desire of withness that is a part of who we are. And because people can't see my mouth, withness, like we're with each other. I love that, by the way. How do you define belonging, and why do you think it's a felt need for us?
You know, belonging, I'm still trying to come up with this like really brilliant, like short definition, but the reality is that it's also somewhat complex. And so it's hard. That's why I had to write a whole book about it. But I'll say this, I often defined belonging for a really long time based only on what other people extended to me. And it was defined by finding the perfect place or the perfect people where I was accepted. But as I began to ask this question of what is belonging, really, I began to discover that yes, belonging does have something to do with what is offered to us. People can extend belonging to us. But belonging is really about who we are and then and embracing the love of God that is embedded within us, that image bearer status, that worth that we have had from the beginning. And then what is that we can extend to others in the midst of our everyday lives? And so with that, it's like belonging is a welcome we carry with us that we can embrace and extend. And so that's kind of the bones and the reframing and the reimagining of what the rest of this concept of belonging, of what is that really, and how do we live that way? What is this way of belonging?
Yeah, I love that. Just even like on the back of your book, and you just said it right now too, where it says, the welcome of God changes everything. I mean, I think for us as believers, if we have felt that, if we felt seen by God, if we felt accepted in that way, like as Kurt Thompson says, like we can know things, but until we feel them in our bodies, it's not real. There is like a sense of being known, I think, that comes to a lot of us as believers. And I believe that's probably what you're talking about. But what is the welcome of God? What does that mean to you?
Yeah, you know, when I think about this concept of welcome, I think about the welcome mat I have outside on my front porch and what it means to walk past that and come home. And so much of my own understanding of the welcome of God has been, it is not only that like capital K knowing, like you talked about with Kurt Thompson, because there is this knowing that transcends the mind, that goes beyond just intellectual, read it in the Bible says this, and therefore we believe it. You know, there's a deeper, wider, more infinite knowing. But the story of the prodigal son, at least that's how it's framed in the Bible and how we talk about it often. A lot of my concept of understanding God's welcome has been shaped by the father in that story. And then Henry Nouwen's kind of take in his own book, The Return of the Prodigal Son, and where it talks about, you know, so often we find our identity or we relate with one son or the other in that story. Either we find ourselves relating to the lostness of the younger son who took the father's inheritance and just squandered it with wild living and ran as far away as he could until he had nothing left. Or we identify with the lostness of the older brother, which is the one I tend to lean to a little bit more, who allowed his worth to get wrapped up in his work, who defined himself by his ability to stay near the Father. Look what I have done. I have worked for you all along. Don't I deserve more? But each son was lost in his own way because the Father all along just wanted his sons to be with him. Sky Gitani in his book, With, talks about this a little bit of saying, like, all along, the Father just wanted to be with his sons. And when we, and what Henry Nouwen kind of, this is really pivotal for me, Henry Nouwen kind of invites us into, is to say, yes, we might relate to one son or the other, but really the call, the invitation is to become like the Father. It is both mm-hmm. to allow ourselves to come home to the Father, to fall into his embrace over and over again, but also then to then become people who are formed in his likeness, people who then learn to extend that same kind of love and warmth and knowing in the midst of our everyday lives. And so to say the welcome of God changes everything, that yes, it changes us and how we see ourselves, but then it also changes how we relate to both God and to other people as well.
Yeah. Oh, that's good. It's deep too, isn't it?
Yeah.
Henry Nouwen has a way with words. I really appreciate him.
He does. And you know, he's just, there's certain writers where you're like, oh, we're speaking a common language, or you're speaking a kind of language that my heart understands. And he's one of them for mm-hmm. me. And I feel like I've barely scratched the surface of his work too. He has a very deep library.
So one thing that stood out to me in your book, I mean, there were a lot of things, honestly, I had to just pick and choose about what we could talk about. But in one chapter, you write about how we often view weakness as an impediment to belonging. So this is really important to me as a counselor, because a lot of people come in feeling very weak. I feel very weak sometimes too. And I love this quote from your book. When need is not seen within the context of our shared humanity, we buy into the idea that our weakness is not welcomed. We square our shoulders, take a deep breath, and puff out our chests in an attempt to appear stronger than we are. We learn to hide the very things that make us human. And that's true. Can you share your thoughts about how we can view our God-given desires as holy rather than as weakness or as impediments to belonging?
Yeah. You know, so often, even now, that initial pang of loneliness or of feeling outside or out of place can very easily tell me a story of lack, mm-hmm. that I am deficient in some way. Something is wrong with me. And since the very beginning, you know, we see in Genesis, when the response to that is often then to hide, it is to pull back, to pull away from God, to pull away from each other. When we see that ache, when we see maybe even, you know, failure, maybe even something that we don't love about ourselves or that we want to change, the instinct is often to hide. But when we begin to see that ache, not as lack, but as longing, as a God-given desire for a type of communal life that is deeply connected both with God and with the people who are around us, then we begin to say, this is not something deficient in me. This is something that is good. Mm-hmm. And this is the desire within me leaning toward that goodness, wanting to pull me in rather than hide. And, you know, going back to that whole concept of like our weakness is not welcomed, I think that really does us a disservice, because the more that we hide our humanity from one another, how easy it is for us to then to put up walls and to have this expectation that we shouldn't ache. And it kind of feeds that narrative of lack that says, you know, you are not enough. And for me personally, getting really, really personal here, I have wrapped so much of my own belonging in the past on acceptance and approval that it's been really easy for me then to not want to reveal the less than beautiful parts of myself, to not want to speak my questions into existence because I'm supposed to, quote unquote, be shiny. I'm supposed to have it figured out. And so like it's a battle I think most of us go through when our belonging, when our weakness does feel determined on presenting a specific version of ourselves. I love what Brené Brown writes. I think it's in Braving the Wilderness, but she said that true belonging doesn't ask us to be something other than what we are, but to be who we are. And that's my paraphrase. That's not word for word. But and who we are is, yes, worthy. We are image bearers of God. We are, each one of us carries God's essence. Like that's who we have been from the beginning. But also we are also weak, and we are in need. It is not good to be alone. Mm-hmm. You know, we need one another. We need God's witness, both withness and witness. We need witnesses to our lives who can help us hold that humanity alongside one another.
Yeah, I completely agree. So the common themes that show up, I hear a lot, and I feel myself, are not being enough. And then on the flip side, being too much, because we can get both kinds of expectations from other people or pick up on cues that tell us one or the other, right? Which makes it hard then to feel accepted or to feel like you fit or whatever. So I really appreciate this conversation. And that carries us into the next part of what I wanted to talk to you about, because on last season, we talked about telling our stories. And at the very end, I talked about how important it is to find safe people, because you can tell aspects of your stories to a lot of people, but the truly deep parts, we really need to make sure we do with safe witnesses, as you say, like who's going to be there and not run screaming from the room and still love us afterwards, you know? And God obviously does that with us, but having safe people makes a difference too, which leads me then to ask you, you talked about the concept of creating circles of belonging. Like we have some people that are very close to us, and then it kind of moves out from there in concentric circles. How can we practice discernment about who inhabits our inner circles? And can you share about like how you're working that out in your life?
Yeah, you know, a practice that I've just started really coming out of writing this book, that I think I kind of always had these circles of, not always, but for the last few years, I've had these circles of belonging idea in the back of my brain. But as I have been trying to figure out how to incorporate it into just some of my practices, my reflective practices in particular, I try to at least once a year, if not quarterly. It's looking a little bit more like every 6 months or so right now, but kind of sit down and ask about a lot of aspects of my life, you know, what's working, what's not working. And along with that, sitting down with those circles of belonging and asking myself, who are the people with whom I am most transparent? And generally that's like two or three people. It's a very small number. It's a very small circle. And reminding myself, that helps me remember to invest in those relationships as well. That I want there to be reciprocity there. And so it helps keep me grounded in those relationships. But also, as you know, as I expand those circles and kind of go to the next level and say, okay, these may not be the people with whom I am most transparent, but I still have a very deep relationship with maybe 4 to 5 other people who I interact with regularly, that we talk about our lives beyond the surface. And so being able then to name those people. And what this practice does is help me, one, to kind of know where to invest the bulk of my relational capacity in that season. It also helps me remember that sometimes the names within those circles can shift. Relationships shift with time, and I can let them, because belonging is anchored. What is at the very center of that circle is God Himself. And that doesn't change. That remains you know, and sometimes I need to be reminded that it's there. Sometimes I am prone to wandering myself, but because God is at that center, that his welcome is with me, then that allows me to also allow other relationships to bend and flex with time, with different seasons, depending on, you know, we're right now entering into the fall and our son, our oldest son, is in marching band, which just takes over our lives. And so my relational capacity with some of my friends is much lower in this season. Like every Saturday is spoken for and Friday night for a lot of the football games. And so just practically speaking, it's going to look different. Those circles are going to look different in this season. But by naming that, it helps me to know who is safe. It helps me to recognize if I have pause in certain relationships and to say what, and to maybe do some, you know, deep dive into that or spend time talking to my spiritual director about that, of what is happening here beneath the surface of this. And so it's, again, it's not a cure-all, but I think it's just a really good reflective tool that we can use in determining who is safe, who, where does the bulk of our transparency and our intimacy go to? And where do we need to be authentic? Because authenticity is still being ourselves, but maybe we're not quite so transparent. They don't get quite so much of ourselves.
Yes, that's a really good way of defining it. So as an Enneagram 2, I've spent a lot of my life chasing people. I'm very good. One of my gifts is connecting with people and pulling people in and taking in the wallflowers and, you know, all that stuff. But probably the last 2 to 3 years, like life has shifted in such a way, well, along with me turning 40 and a lot of other things. So midlife, maybe, along with some stressors and family stuff, that got me to a point where I couldn't do that. Like I didn't have the energy to do that, which could have been a crisis point. Or really what God did was like break me of some of that. Like, who's coming after you too? Like, why are you always doing the work? You know, like, who are the people who are trying to invest in me too? Like that reciprocity that you're talking about. And so even though I did not write down like circles necessarily, in a way, I kind of did that naturally, just pay attention to like, who are the people that I feel safe with, who are also trying to invest in me? And how do I make space for those relationships rather than wasting energy and all these places that I really don't have time and energy to be wasting right now in this season of life? And so this is a very healthy way of doing that. And I really love that. And I think we could do that in our heads. We can do that on a piece of paper, but I think it's very healthy and important. And I love how you talked about that it can transition over time, because it does. Like friendship season are sometimes just a season. Sometimes they're lifelong. And the best ones are the ones that can pick right up where you left off, even if it's been a really long time. So,
right. Yeah. And I think too, if we find ourselves in seasons of transition with certain relationships, friendships, family members, that we also allow ourselves time perhaps to grieve that, you know, mm-hmm. and to notice and then to name, oh, this is changing. And maybe there's some sadness there. Maybe there's relief. I don't know. Like maybe there could be a multitude of things that we experience in the midst of that shift. But I think naming helps us be able to hold it mm-hmm. a little differently. Mm-hmm. And I love those three questions that you just said. If anyone goes back and like listens to the three questions that Jenny just said, because those are good ones to kind of assess those inner circles. Mm-hmm.
Okay, so I'd love to talk about humility with you, which you talk about belonging, which on its face doesn't seem like it belongs really in this conversation, but it totally does. And I really appreciate that you brought this up. You write that humility expands our welcome and that humility is secure attachment in action. Now, a year and a half ago, I did a whole series on this podcast about attachment and I got the best feedback. People loved it, but that was a year and a half ago. And so I'm not sure that they completely remember what secure attachment is, but also, can you explain what that has to do with humility and how those two things interact in your mind?
Yeah. When I think of secure attachment, specifically attachment to God, I think of hands that are holding me.
Uh-huh.
And so it doesn't matter whether I, you know, in terms of like humility, like I am held. And so I can have the humility to both know who I am, to rest in who I am, to have that sense of settledness, but while also being aware and being able to name the things that I don't know, the things that are weaknesses, you know, going back to that weakness conversation or that humanity conversation, weakness is a whole lot less threatening when we have a posture of being held and we are humble.
Mm-hmm.
Because to be humble is to, it has the same root of the word human. It is to be people of humus, of the earth. We come from this earthiness. And when we are humble, it's not a diminishment of ourselves. It is not digging our faces down in the dirt, but it is also not an inflated version of self in which we expect ourselves to be experts or we pursue greatness or elevate ourselves above others, that we allow ourselves to be held by God, to sink into his embrace, and then just allow ourselves to be human mm-hmm. in that posture mm-hmm. with one another.
Yeah, because I think about like the opposite of that is kind of pretense in a way. And a lot of times we feel like we have to have that or like mask in some way to be accepted or to feel, and that looks different for each one of us, what that looks like. But humility is just saying like, here I am, this is me. And when we feel welcomed by God and held, that's not a problem. Like we can just be us. Right. I love that. And I love that root word, by the way. I'm so glad you brought that up. I thought that was so interesting. Humus of the earth.
Yeah. Yeah. I always want to say hummus, which is one of my favorite dips, but humus.
Which, you know what? This maybe has taken it too far, but that makes me think like from dust we come, you know, really. And to dust we will return.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's just to remember. Yeah. To remember our beginnings and to remember our endings and that we are held in the in between.
Beautiful. That's beautiful. Okay. You wrote about a quote from Dietrich Bonhoeffer. He says, "He who loves his dream of a community more than the Christian community itself becomes a destroyer of the latter, even though his personal intentions may be ever so honest and earnest and sacrificial." Oh, that got me right in the heart a little bit. How can we embrace true community rather than the idealized version we have in our minds? I mean, this is an honest question. I'm really asking this because I struggle with this myself. Like, it's one thing to think about the kingdom of God here on earth and all the things I think God meant by that and what I think that should look like versus walking into our actual churches with real humans.
Right. Yeah, I think for me, one of my biggest struggles and why that quote, like I have it underlined and highlighted and stars and circles and all the things, that one really kind of took the wind out of me because I realized that I so often held back parts of myself in relationships, my existing relationships, because I was always kind of tethered to this romanticized ideal of what I thought the communal life would look like or mm-hmm. should look like. Maybe that was flavored a little bit by scripture or things that I've heard in church. Maybe it's also flavored by watching too much Friends. Both are possible. But in reading that quote and the reframing that I have had to do is reminding myself that the communal life, that this living this life of the kingdom, of living alongside each other, of what it looks like truly to love God and love neighbor as ourselves, is actually a lot more clumsy and bumpy and awkward. And instead of expecting it not to be that way and holding out for some idealized version, there's actually a lot of peace and settledness and goodness right where we are, in the people who are with us right where we are. And yes, it might be hard. Yes, it might be awkward. But if we're beginning to shift our vision from the horizon to the ground at our feet, we then begin to notice the goodness that is there too. Slowly, sometimes it's difficult and when we're human alongside each other long enough, we tend to bruise or to kick each other in the shins or give each other some sort of paper cuts along the way. But there's also a lot of beauty there and a sense of freedom that I don't have to keep striving, that God is here, that he is here with me, no matter how many people are in my circles or not in my circles. And sometimes a brief interaction with a neighbor can be just the balm that I need in a season of loneliness, as is a handful of friends with whom I can go deep all the time.
Yeah.
And so I just think it's been, you know, so much of my life has been learning to shift my expectations. And I think in regard to belonging, it's just been shifting it from this idealized version that may not even be real. I don't know. To being an active participant in the very real life that I actually have.
Yeah. You're speaking to me too. I'm always have high expectations. It's tough, isn't it? And in retrospect is usually when God shows me the beauty. It's usually not in the middle. Sometimes it is. Sometimes it's afterwards where I'm like, oh, that was actually really good and actually exactly what I needed, even though I wasn't paying attention at the time, which helps me have a different idea of what comes next maybe as well. Yeah. So.
I was going to say, I think too, that's why for me, thinking about belonging, both in terms of what is mine to embrace within God himself and the goodness that comes along the way, you know, we can embrace other people who extend welcome to us as well. But if that's the only way that we define belonging, that if we don't also define it as what we extend to other people, it's really easy for us to cave inward on ourselves. It's really easy for us to only think about ourselves. But if we walk into a room or walk down the street or walk into our kitchens with eyes that are looking outward while still being aware of what's happening inside, then that shifts the belonging for us. We're not just thinking about what we can take, but what we can also give mm-hmm. to become the kind of people that we want others to be for us. And not that we're the answer to all people. We're not welcome mats, you know? But I think that the paying attention piece does shift when we also learn to have eyes to see outside ourselves, to paying attention to the other people in the room and the complexities mm-hmm. they carry into that room as well.
You know, I think that is such a gift. And I'm thinking about you specifically because I think you are an internal processor who pays a lot of attention to what's going on the inside. So I know that that was a journey to get to that place probably. And then there's others of us that do pay attention to what's happening on the outside, have a harder time paying attention to what's going on the inside. But either way, what you're talking about is like this anchored place where we are held by God, which is a regulating force inside of us that then helps us to be able to shift our attention. I really love that. Like a spotlight yeah. that is always facing the wrong way and like God gives us the ability to see both and hold both. I love that so much.
And you're so right. And you're 100% correct that I have a tendency to cave inward to get lost inside myself. but you know, I also have family members who are more like you, who struggle to pause and pay attention and to take time to say, what is happening within my inner landscape? What is the terrain? What is the weather today?
Yeah.
You know, and for all of us, I think in our pursuit of wholeness, I think that we have a good balance of both. And maybe that shifts a little in seasons, but I think that both are essential to that wholeness.
I think you're exactly right. Is there anything you wanted to say that we didn't get a chance to talk about? Anything about your book or about what you're up to these days? And where can we find your book too?
Yeah. Oh, thank you. I think the thing that I just would love to say to leave people with when it comes to belonging is just to remembering that this way of belonging is a way of being. that it isn't a place of arrival. It's not a set it and forget it. You know, so often when I think about belonging, the image that continues to come to mind is Lake Michigan specifically, because that's the nearest large body of water for me. But for others, maybe it's the ocean, that there is that measure of learning to float, that there is ebb and flow, the tides change, the waves come in and they go back out. And the way of belonging is a way of being that invites us to bend and shift with those changing of the tides. And it is more of a posture that we take in the midst of that than it is a place of arrival, because places change and people change and we change. You know, you think of who you were 5, 10 years ago. I'm going to guess 100% we're not all exactly who we were. And so this view of belonging allows space for that. It allows space for who we have changed and who we are yet to become, both us and the people around us. And so I hope that the book, which you can find, by the way, you can go to my website or just Google The Way of Belonging or bookshop.org, Amazon, all those places, you'll find it. I just hope that the book is an exhale for those of us who find belonging to be really fraught, or who have, quote unquote, done the right things and still feel so desperately out of place. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So I just hope that it's a gentle companion in those seasons.
Well, thank you so much. I really appreciate your time and your words.
Absolutely. Yeah, it's good to spend some time with you as well. It's always a delight.
Thanks again, Sarah, for being on today's podcast episode. I always enjoy our conversations. We have so much in common, but I also really appreciate how thoughtful you are about things that matter. Friends, I really highly recommend her book, especially if belonging is something that you've been thinking about or working on in your own story. Sarah also has a really great podcast called Human Together. I will link to her website in today's show notes so that you can check both out from there. Well, guys, we're going to be talking more about our theme of being in process in next week's episode. And if you're not already subscribed to PRN, Pause, Renew, Next, I hope you'll go out and subscribe on whatever podcast app you like most so you don't miss an episode. And friends, if you enjoy this podcast, would you do me a favor? Would you help spread the word? Go tell one of your friends or family about this podcast, or send them a link, or go rate and review, hopefully highly, on your favorite podcast app. All of those things help new listeners find this podcast. I'd love to close our time together today with a liturgy that Sarah leaves at the end of her book, which, by the way, was published by InterVarsity Press. It's called A Liturgy for When Belonging Feels Far Off. Father God, from the very beginning, you folded your welcome within us like a divine inheritance. You tucked withness into every corner of our personhood, unseen and yet firmer than the bones in our bodies. But many days the sun sets in bitterness, and isolation creeps around every corner. Loneliness presses in like a fog, and the promise of communion flickers like a distant candle. God who sees, find us even here. Help us remember who you are and who you made us to be. May we not grow jaded by our wanting, but always reaching out to you and to each other. Jesus, keep the echoes of your prayer alive when hope is dim, so that I in them, you in me, rises like an anthem, and every breath is a reminder we belong. I'm Jenny Detweiler with PRN. Pause, renew, next. May you be encouraged on your journey with Jesus.